Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's Casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday. Tuesday, Casual Tuesday. Wednesday, Casual Hump Day. Thursday, Casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 19th, 2021. My name is Emma Vigeland in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Anna Kasparian of TYT joins us on this casual Friday to talk about the news. Meanwhile, the death toll from the winter storms across the United States rose to at least 49 people as of this morning, and at least 500,000 Texans are still without power. More storm fronts threaten parts of Texas, Arkansas, and more. Broken pipes and damaged water main lines have caused a shortage in drinkable water for the state, acutely affecting hospitals as well as households. Meanwhile, Senator Ted Cruz attempts to do damage control. As he was caught jetting off to Cancun as his state faces this massive crisis, and he's decided to blame his young daughters for needing a vacation. Always the epitome of class. The storms have also disrupted vaccine distribution throughout the country. Vaccine shipping centers have been slowed substantially, causing health centers and injection sites to postpone appointments. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has formally restarted negotiations with Iran to restore the widely praised Obama-era nuclear deal that President Trump scrapped. Biden faces challenges on his immigration proposal that would provide a pathway to citizenship for 11 million people. However, it is being met with pessimism due to the fact that Democrats have such slim majorities and the existence of the filibuster, of course. But Biden has also come under fire for abandoning his pledge, seemingly, to halt deportations. Democrats are also attempting to speed up the process of pushing Biden's $1.9 trillion pandemic aid package through Congress, as much of the existing jobs aid and other aid expires mid-March. Hopefully, they finish on time. In Peru, scandal erupts after it was discovered that 500 wealthy and connected people received the Chinese coronavirus vaccine last year before it was even approved and ahead of essential and healthcare workers. And lastly, the United Nations has spoken out against India's oppression of Kashmir, expressing concern about the conditions after, as many know, India's Hindu nationalist government ended a constitutional provision that gave citizenship rights to the majority Muslim region. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this casual Friday. I am happy that it's Friday. First week of me hosting solo with the help of Matt. I'm excited for this show today because Anna's a great friend, always great to talk to her about politics, and we are chock full of news and clips today, so let's get to it. Andrew Cuomo continues to be mired in scandal as the governor of New York because he obscured almost half of the nursing home deaths due to coronavirus, allegedly, in order to bolster his public profile and his hopeful presidential run, which I believe might be squashed right now in 2024. That's my speculation on the matter. He wrote a book trying to herald himself as this COVID savior, the person who solved the pandemic, when the numbers were counterfactual to that. And they would have even been worse had he not covered up this nursing home death data. Now, Ron Kim, an assemblyman from the Queens area, I believe, he spoke out and said that Cuomo threatened him in a phone call if he did not stop speaking out about this cover-up. Now, Cuomo has fired back, calling him a liar, accusing him of criminal activity, pretty unsubstantiated, essentially trying to intimidate him like a mob boss. These are Trumpian tactics. I keep calling him Blue Trump because that's who he is. And if you follow New York politics at all, you'll know that this is not out of character for Cuomo. He has engaged in these tactics many a time. And we have confirmation from Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York City, who spoke to Morning Joe and confirmed that these kinds of incidents are in Cuomo's character and in his history.
Advisor for Governor Cuomo says, so a senior advisor for Governor Cuomo says Kim is lying, that at no time did anyone threaten to destroy anyone with their wrath. I got to ask you, I don't want you to weigh in on that specifically, but you know Governor Cuomo, you guys have jousted in the past. He says, Kim says that he got this irate phone call that started out, are you an honorable man? And it went for 10 minutes of him yelling and then threats to publicly tarnish him. Have you ever heard of anything like that from Governor Cuomo? Have you ever spoken with him and anything like that happened?
Yeah, it's a sad thing to say, Mika, but that's classic Andrew Cuomo. A lot of people in New York State have received those phone calls. The bullying is nothing new. I believe Ron Kim, and it's very, very sad. No public servant, no person who's telling the truth should be treated that way. The threats, the belittling, the demand that someone change their statement right that moment, many, many times. I've heard that, and I know a lot of other people in this state have heard that.
There you go. There you have it. We've heard rumblings about the way Cuomo has behaved. Cuomo's top aide, one of his top aides, was convicted on corruption charges. Cuomo has constantly, in the press, gone after Bill de Blasio, someone who's the mayor of the biggest city in his state, one of the biggest cities in the world. And yeah, you know, a lot of people wrote that off as like, oh, you know, typical New York politics. This is just people jousting and trying to appear a certain way. But really, it was bullying. And I know that Bill de Blasio is a public figure, so it applies less to him. But it was an example of how Cuomo treats other people. And if he was treating de Blasio publicly like this, basically saying, I have the authority over you, I can treat you in this way, he was treating people with a lot less power, way worse behind the scenes, as Ron Kim revealed to the media. And just so people remember, no love lost for Bill de Blasio, especially in the way that he has caved and catered to the police union despite his campaign against them. I mean, he's capitulated to them as they use similar bullying tactics. But de Blasio was a way better person and politician than Andrew Cuomo. And de Blasio, maybe not politician, but in terms of his ideology, I should say, de Blasio wanted to lock down New York 5 days before Andrew Cuomo did, when COVID hit initially. Cuomo said no. That caused thousands more deaths. Thousands. And then Cuomo, I think, basically mocked de Blasio for that idea. And then 5 days later, we were all locked down. So he's arrogant. He's narcissistic. He's not fit to lead the state. I don't understand how, you know, anyone's defending him at this point. If you're defending Andrew Cuomo at this point, you're blue MAGA. You're a part of a cult. You're obsessed with the blue side, and it's a personality-based, nonsense, emotional argument.
Yeah, and I just want to say, like, the bullying is one thing. He's also corrupt, more corrupt than a typical high school bully would be, though. Like this article from David Sirota in The Guardian from last May. Cuomo gave immunity to nursing home executives after big campaign donations. Critics say data proves New York's liability shield is linked to higher nursing home death rates during the pandemic. So most bullies don't have to go on the offensive because they have made massive mistakes of mass life and death. And yeah, he needs to get out of here. He needs to leave. And I hope... You know, I mean, it's amazing, and I'm definitely not making a joke about this. It's when de Blasio says that, it sounds like a Me Too about Cuomo, and that is kind of the situation we're in. We're like, this is an open secret. Everyone knows, like even people who are peripherally like into New York politics know who this guy is. And now people are just getting a new sort of vernacular to say it, and hopefully it has some effect on his, stranglehold over this state, because it's
he behaves like a dictator, and yeah. I mean, I just to give our viewers who aren't in New York just some window into it, you know, Matt mentions that corruption with the nursing homes. he also just faces scandal about COVID vaccines, where he was only allowing hospitals, where he gets a ton of donations from for-profit hospitals, to distribute vaccines. He's had to backtrack on it because it was wildly inefficient. And all of these centers that are state-run, city-run, have received training for this very purpose, but he scrapped it because it's like, ah, I gotta reward my donors. He's comically corrupt, and he has been for a long time. And the IDC, which was a caucus of Democrats who voted like Republicans, he was so in favor of that caucus because it allowed him to not actually put any progressive legislation through. He's a centrist dictator. He is a far-right Democratic version of Trump. And you see that in the bullying and the obfuscation of COVID data, the lying about COVID data. It may not be as persistent. It may not be as obsessively covered by the media, one, because he's not the president, but two, because let's be real, the media has a bias towards centrist Democratic politicians. But hopefully those days are over, because luckily Morning Joe is covering it. Other sources are media is covering it as well. He is under intense scrutiny. The state legislature might strip him of his emergency powers. I am in COVID relief. I am 100% in favor of that, but it's not far enough. He needs to resign, and he's being investigated by the FBI, and he should be. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Anna Kasparian is going to be joining us. Very exciting.
Hey, today's show is sponsored by Monk Pack, who make snacks that taste like our favorite sugary treats, but they have 1 gram of sugar or less. They're like, granola bars, but nut bars as well. They got maple pecan, all sorts of ones. They're delicious. They are Monk Pack keto granola bars. They contain 2 grams of net carbs. They're only 140 calories. Like I say, they come in delicious flavors like coconut chocolate chip, honey nut, blueberry, almond, vanilla. Gosh, I'm hungry. They're keto friendly. They're gluten free. They're grain free, plant based, and they're non-GMO. I am hanging out with the kids all this week, and particularly Saul. He is not responsible for his own snack situation, and both of them love these Monk bars. But with Saul, it's really this thing. It nails it. Total wheelhouse. And you know, one of the things, to be honest, and it's the same thing I got with just about anything else I give the kids, I don't want to give them junky stuff. And Monk Pack has no sugar, well, very little sugar, 140 calories. And like I say, they're grain free, they're gluten free, they're keto friendly, they're non-GMO, and they're healthy for the kids, and they love them. They're delicious. You can try it for yourself. You'll see. We have a special deal for our listeners. You get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com, entering our code Majority Report at checkout. And Monk Pack, they're super confident in their product. It's backed with 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product, refund your money, whichever you prefer. To get started, just go to monkpack.com. That's Monk, M-U-N-K, Pack. .com, PACK.com. Select any product, then enter the code Majority Report at checkout to save 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious. It's food you can count on. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Also, Emma, I know you will enjoy this. She always does when I talk about my Hello Tushy. Hello Tushy 3.0 modern bidet attachment. It's finally here. It's stylish. It's eco-friendly. It's easy to install. It's affordable. I've mentioned this many times, but during the whole COVID great toilet paper apocalypse, Kyle told me, Kyle, who does a lot of our tech stuff, all of our tech stuff, really, beyond our tech stuff, told me that he got a bidet, and I was like, I'm not, that's too big of an investment for me. He's like, it has changed my life. Then Hello Tushy came along. It, I'm telling you, it is a revelation. You begin to understand what the heck is going on for, I don't know how many centuries they've had a bidet, but they have them all over Europe. They have them in Asia. I don't know why we don't have them here, but Hello Tushy makes it super easy. Remember, Hello Tushy 3.0, it doesn't just cleanse your butt with a precise stream of fresh water. It cleans itself. It does it before and after it's used with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. And here's the thing. It attaches to your existing toilet. You don't need any electricity. You don't need any additional plumbing. It cuts your toilet paper use by about 80% because you get cleansed by water and then you just dry yourself off. You pat dry yourself. Sanitation's simple. Schmutz Shield offers easy cleansing, and the knobs are naturally microbial, antimicrobial. Microbial would be bad, I guess. Antimicrobial is much better. Every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. I can promise you, after those 60 days, you wouldn't even contemplate it, giving it back. Upgrade to the new 3.0 model if you're already hooked on Hello Tushy, or if you're new to the revolution, joins millions of happy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush. Go to HelloTushy.com/majority to get 10% off your plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to HelloTushy.com/majority for 10% off. HelloTushy, TUSHY.com/majority. And then lastly, today's sponsor on the program, Sunset Lake CBD, SunsetLakeCBD.com. I've been talking about this company for a long time. I've been leaning heavily on the CBD tincture to get off of, you know, really not good for you sleeping aids. And it's worked. It's been great. I've used the Solve to deal with some of my sore muscles when I had my neck issue. Took a little bit of the edge off there. I've used it on my, frankly, on my eczema, but I don't know if it works for other people on their eczema, but I can tell you it works on mine. Matt has a lot of fun with the smokables, particularly the Smalls is his favorite. For me, I'm not that big of a smoker, but occasionally a pre-roll puts me in right in good shape. I'm enjoying that. They have gummies, CBD gummies. And this is the thing about eating the CBD. They have now CBD-infused fudge, if they have any left, because I would be surprised if they haven't sold out, frankly, by now. But the CBD fudge is delicious, and I'm telling you, when it goes through the digestive system, there's something different that happens. And it's just a super mellow feeling, and it's fantastic. And so it's like two treats in one. You just got to be careful if you're like me that you don't eat too many because I have a sweet tooth and it's tough for me to stop. But nevertheless, they also have coffee infused with CBD, a couple of different roasts. They're delicious. They're my weekend brew. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. If you've never tried CBD before and you've had, you know, or you've had it before and you didn't have a great experience, that you are in the same boat as Matt and myself. And these guys, they just do a great job of growing this stuff. It's pesticide free. They use organic fertilizer. They use integrated pest management to deal with pests. They work with the University of Vermont to do integrated agriculture. So it's good for the land. They do great business practices, $15 minimum wage. They're Bernie supporters from way back. They're outside of Burlington up in Vermont. SunsetLakeCBD.com. I can't say more about this company. Left is best. One word, left is best, will get you 20% off any of their products. Left is best. One word, 20% off. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Back to Emma.
Thanks so much, Sam. You know, I love those Hello Tushy ads. And now joining us now is Anna Kasparian.
Hey, what's up, Emma?
I'm trying to use the How you doing?
I'm doing well. Actually, no, I'm lying. I tried changing the lithium-ion battery on my MacBook Pro last night, and it was the worst decision of my life. So it's been a long night and a long morning, but I'm happy to be here with you.
I appreciate you coming on. Why did you try to do such a thing yourself?
Well, you know, it's my work computer, which I need for the job I do 6 days a week. So when I went to go get it professionally removed and replaced, they told me they needed to hold on to it for 8 to 12 business days. And so I really had no choice. But now my laptop has to be connected to a charger 24/7. The second I like take it out, it just shuts down immediately. So turns out I'm not good at tech.
Yeah, turns out. I mean, I could have never seen that coming, but I do appreciate you coming on the show. Regardless, hopefully we can cheer your mood up, because people don't realize I love Anna. We're dear friends, and it's really good to see you.
It's so good to be here, Emma. You know, I had been watching Majority Report even before you joined the team, but you've only sweetened the deal. So it's really great to be here, and I'm glad that we're doing this.
So let's talk about Ted Cruz, because this is a fun little segment. I cannot believe that he had the gall to fly to Cancun as he's experiencing this. But the best part about what we're seeing right now is the cover-up, his terrible excuse, and then also the fact that if you saw his wife's group chat was leaked to the New York Times. You have friends. We text. Could you imagine ever leaking our messages or your friends leaking your messages to the press in order to corroborate something you've done?
I can't imagine that happening, but the people in my life that I keep close to me, I would like to think actually like me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And Ted Cruz is just an overall unlikable person, considering the fact that he was willing to go out there and phone bank for Trump. And, you know, not only that, I mean, he's been one of the top Trump loyalists. And this was all after Trump humiliated his wife, banishing her from Twitter as a result. I mean, I can't imagine that sat well with Heidi, much less some of her friends or whoever was in that family chat. But the one point that I do want to make about Ted Cruz's behavior is, I mean, none of it was really shocking to me. Of course, he would go on a beach vacation while his own constituents are suffering without power and water. It's to be expected. And the reason why I say that is because the Senate is on recess right now. The Senate is on recess. I mean, we still have not passed COVID relief. You know, we're still dealing with this pandemic. We're dealing with a terrible economic situation. People are really suffering. And Senate's like, peace, we're out. Yeah. And it's just, it's unacceptable.
Important constituent work. I mean, that was Chris Murphy's excuse. And like, for me, I don't. We'll get back to Ted Cruz in a second. I'm curious about your thoughts about not calling witnesses, because a lot of people were really outraged. I was off when this story was happening. That Democrats refused to call witnesses when Trump's team was planning on calling over 100. Clearly wanted to gum up the works and elongate this process, and I think that was their strategy. I think the Democrats were right to expedite that. And I know that that's not a popular opinion on the left right now, but they're not right. The Senate is not right to go on recess. Let's be clear. But if we're really trying to make sure that this impeachment trial lasted so long that it made things incredibly difficult for the Senate to do other business, like, I don't see what could have been achieved by making this process last weeks longer. What's your thoughts?
Well, my issue with the Democrats is that they seem to be pretty wishy-washy in anything they engage in. So everyone knew that Trump was going to be acquitted in the Senate. And so the purpose that was, you know, cited over and over again was that this is the opportunity. It's basically political theater, right? And it's an opportunity to really highlight and note for the record what Trump really engaged in, and then to use that against the Republican Party, namely the Republican senators who vote to acquit him. So if that was their intention and their obligation going in, then why not go all the way? And I think the issue that I have with Democrats is that they always allow the Republican Party to set the terms of everything, even when they have a slim majority, even when they have the power. They're unwilling to do what Republicans would do if the shoe were on the other foot. So if they were going to do this in a wishy-washy way and not fight the way that they claimed to in the beginning, then why bother at all? I mean, it just ends up giving Trump the opportunity to brag about how he was acquitted. That happened. They never, ever, I mean, this happened after the first impeachment trial. They hold the trial, they have the evidence. And like the whole idea is that after Republican lawmakers vote to acquit Trump, you go on a campaign, an aggressive campaign, calling them out. They don't do it. They just don't do it. And so if they're not going to follow through on what the objective is, then don't do it at all, because it's incredibly embarrassing. We're already on to the next. And what's also infuriating is that Democrats are now talking about like immigration and foreign policy, and they're all over the place. Get us those checks right now. What are you guys doing? It's shameful. It's shameful.
Well, the negotiation process is just infuriating because they're negotiating against themselves. I mean, biggest problem I have is that Biden wasted a ton of time just don't even go through the process of saying we're going to do this in a floor vote, right? Like, there's no point. Just do it through reconciliation from the start. Because if they don't have this signed and checks aren't sent out by mid-March, there is a gap in aid. Right? There's a gap in unemployment since the last COVID relief bill. So it wasn't time to kind of play patty cakes with Republicans. The time was to act swiftly and to understand your enemy. And I think kind of what a lot of our critiques boil down to is that the Democrats, after all of this time, after Trump, who they still try to divorce from the GOP, they still don't understand their enemy. They still don't get who they're dealing with. But yeah, that's infuriating.
Yeah, well, one thing to keep in mind, and I'm seeing no coverage of this, and it's really strange, but, you know, when it comes to the economic relief bill, Biden had a proposal that included a minimum wage hike, $15 an hour minimum wage. And now all of a sudden, he's really backing off on that proposal. He's wavering, and he says that he doesn't believe that provision would pass the Byrd rule through reconciliation. And it's so strange, right, that he all of a sudden starts wavering until you read the details about meetings he's been having in the White House, including a meeting he had just last week with corporate CEOs, the head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which, by the way, also sent Biden and Congress an open letter arguing that the COVID relief plan needed to be much more targeted. And of course, they pushed back against the $15 an hour minimum wage. And so when we talk about Democrats being weak, I think that we also need to like really focus and hone in on how they're not really weak. They're just serving the best interests of their donors. They're serving the best interests of the people who have actually fought against the American people hardest. And those are the corporate CEOs. Those are, you know, the heads of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, J.P. Morgan Chase and what have you. Biden is not concerned about the Byrd rule. OK, if the Republican Party was able to successfully pass tax cuts for the rich and that somehow qualified under the Byrd rule and was able to pass through reconciliation, I have a hard time believing that a $15 an hour minimum wage hike wouldn't pass in the same way. So as soon as you hear the wavering, as soon as you hear the wishy-washy language coming from corporate Democrats, understand that there's a very real reason for that, because we've seen how hard they're willing to fight against progressive policy proposals. They'll be wolves when it comes to those types of issues. But when it comes to wavering on the policies that Americans desperately need right now, it's not just because they're weak. There's a very clear reason for why they do that.
Well, it's also what I hate about it is the cowardice of hiding behind procedure. No one in America gives a fuck about the Byrd rule. No one knows what it is. No one cares. I mean, Manchin is literally saying that he would use the Byrd rule specifically to kill a $15 minimum wage. Like, imagine how idiotic that is to hinge your politics on that kind of thing. That's not politics. That's just an obsession with maintaining a personal brand, as Sam always says. And Manchin's brand is, I'm going to be as centrist as possible, and I'm going to you know, screw the Democrats in every which way so that I can maintain the sort of image. I want to talk about something that Biden's been incredibly wishy-washy on. He had a campaign promise about canceling student loan debt. So people are clear. He could do it with the stroke of a pen. The same authority that he used to halt interest rates in the middle of the pandemic is the exact same authority that he could use to cancel any amount of student loan debt. He's decided that an executive order on $10,000 of student loan debt, that might be legal, but $50,000, then it becomes illegal. It's entirely arbitrary, and it's, as I mentioned, it's hiding behind procedure, I guess, to a certain extent, but also just an ignorance on behalf of the American people. Not even an ignorance that should be decried, but just because people don't know this stuff in the weeds. It's very cynical, but he has kind of, I think, convinced himself that it's like the moral thing to do, because if we cancel this amount of debt, then wow, what will that lead to? It'll lead to actually a jumpstart in the economy. But let me just get to this clip really quick, Anna, because this is Jen Psaki, who now is kind of walking back his comments from the town hall a little bit, or just like obscuring them even more. I just want to see what you think, because I don't know where this lands, by the way, where this fight ends up going.
Sure, go ahead.
Another follow-up on last night. The president said pretty clearly that he doesn't think he has the authority to cancel $50,000 in student loan debt. Today, Senators Schumer and Warren said in a statement that they were told the administration is still working on figuring out if it has the authority. So if your lawyers would determine that canceling this is legal, would the president go ahead with this? And if not, why not?
Well, first, on last night's town hall, for those of you who didn't see the whole thing, he was reiterating his previously stated position, which is he doesn't favor $50,000 in student loan relief without limitation. And he used some examples of the types of schools or when it should be reimbursed or refunded. He said previously that relief above $10,000 should be targeted based on the borrower's income, based on the kind of debt in question, public schools versus private schools, graduate schools versus undergraduate. Obviously, there's a lot of considerations at play. What the president has told Senators Schumer and Warren is that once his team is in place at the Justice Department, and they are not, of course, they're not confirmed at this point, he will ask them to conduct a legal review of his authority to act by executive action in conjunction with a policy review from his domestic policy counsel on his on how executive action debt relief, if any, should be targeted. So obviously that's a review that would need to take place. There's a legal consideration there, as I think everybody agrees. There's a policy consideration. And once that's concluded, he'll decide the path forward.
So he hasn't yet ruled it out if all of these ifs and buts are still in place. And obviously you need your team in place and the review to take place.
That's right. There needs to be a team at the Justice Department to make a recommendation on his legal authority. And obviously the domestic policy team is in place, but they would be a part of that conversation certainly as well. And in the meantime, if Congress moves forward and sends him a package that provides $10,000 of student debt relief, he'd be eager to sign that. So there are several levers here, and he's looking forward to that process.
Okay. So a task force, basically. He is hiding behind the fact that he knows that a bill to cancel student loan debt is not going to get through a filibuster. It's not going to happen. What are your thoughts on that clip? Because I just think she muddied the waters even more. I have no idea where this goes. I mean, I'm going to err on him not doing anything, but
I think that your prediction is accurate. I don't think that he's going to cancel a single dollar of student loan debt. And the way that this conversation has kind of devolved just provides evidence of that. Let's talk quickly about the Justice Department under Biden and what they've done so far in regard to student loan debt, because that's very relevant with Jen Psaki, citing the Justice Department as the arbiter of whether or not Biden canceling student loan debt through executive action is legal. It is. It is. He could do it with the stroke of a pen. And by the way, please check out David Dayen's fantastic reporting on that. You know, he talks about what Biden can accomplish through executive order, like bypassing Congress, not even having to worry about any of that. The Justice Department so far under Biden has decided to run interference for or on behalf of Betsy DeVos. Betsy DeVos is currently facing a lawsuit by students because she was held in contempt of court after a federal judge ruled that she must stop collecting student loan payments from students who had been defrauded from for-profit colleges. So there was a federal judge who ruled that way. Betsy DeVos ignored that judge. She proceeded to not only collect student loan payments from people that she had no business collecting student loan payments from, she did so by garnishing their wages. And then the federal judge found her in contempt. And she's facing a lawsuit by the students. So the students want her to submit a deposition. And guess what Biden's Justice Department did? Ran interference, and they're essentially preventing and helping Betsy DeVos from having to submit a deposition. Why are they doing that? She broke the law. She was held in contempt. She had to pay a $100,000 fine, which, by the way, was paid by the education department. So we paid for that fine, which is also infuriating. But my point here is, I don't trust Biden's Justice Department to do the right thing on behalf of students, period. The fact that they're protecting Betsy DeVos from having to submit a deposition tells you everything you need to know about how this Justice Department feels about student loan debt and students getting defrauded.
Absolutely. And I'm kind of interested really about the psychology behind it. I know that that's a little bit out there, but, you know, Biden came from a state that was the credit card state, and he was the credit card senator, and he is obsessed with kind of disciplining young people through debt and disciplining people through debt. I mean, there's a reason that students can't file for bankruptcy and lost those protections for their student loans. I mean, Biden really does believe in this kind of mythical notion of fiscal responsibility and debt as a way to keep people in check. And that's why he's so quickly backtracking on this campaign promise. And let's not forget, the federal government is the number one institution that gives out student loans. They make cash off of people suffering under the crushing weight of student loans. And so it's a lot more insidious than it even comes off. And again, hiding behind task forces, hiding behind procedure, hiding behind all of, oh, we're going to come together and make the accurate decision on this. Have an ideology. Like, have an ideology. And it's this mythology of smarts and experts. No, no, no. What's the right thing to do? What's the good thing to do? I am flummoxed. It would also be a massive campaign boon to him because he struggled with Latinos, for example, in the last race. A lot of these for-profit colleges, they prey on people like immigrants and people of color in particular, with degrees that don't give them anything, and then they're saddled with debt for many, many years. So it would just be a win no matter what. But he refuses to do so. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on just, like, why?
Well, I mean, Emma, I think you're being a little too harsh. I mean, Biden has minorities in his cabinet. End of story. That's it.
Sorry, I forgot.
And I think the hollow pandering that the Democratic Party engages in and tries to pass off as, you know, doing something in name of diversity, it's so insulting. And they use race, gender, sexual orientation, everything you could imagine in order to differentiate themselves from the Republican Party, right? And all of this symbolic stuff that they do, I'm sure counts for something. But when it comes down to actual substantive policy that genuinely improves the lives of everyone, but also disproportionately the Black community, Latinos, as you mentioned, they don't do it. They don't do it. For-profit colleges have preyed heavily, as you mentioned, on the Latino community, on the Black community, on our veterans. Okay. And what is Biden doing? What is he doing? And so I don't really think... Look, Branko Marsatich wrote a really, really great book about, you know, Biden's career, who he really is. And the fact of the matter is, you know, based on that very well-researched book, he's never really had like a strong political ideology. He's always been pretty malleable, right? And he tends to be more malleable in the direction of the right wing, in the direction of corporate interests. And that's exactly why he was so willing to champion that bankruptcy bill and make sure that it passes. And as a result, students are like unable to ever discharge their student loan debt, even if they file for bankruptcy. It's nearly impossible. And even if a federal judge rules that they no longer have to pay back student loan debt because they've been defrauded, Biden's Justice Department will come in and help protect a previous education secretary who decided to continue collecting those student loan debt payments anyway. I mean, it's just, this is who he is. This is what he represented before he was elected. I think it's silly to think that he'd be any different, even given the economic anxiety and instability that Americans are facing right now.
Yeah, I mean, the honeymoon's over. I'm still in favor of, you know, I'm still encouraged by the fact that he wants to go bigger on stimulus and learn some lessons from the Obama era. And I think he's been good on vaccines. But that's kind of it right now. That's kind of it right now. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to be realistic about that. I know you have to run. I just want to get into this fun Ted Cruz stuff, maybe lift all of our spirits after being a bit depressed by the Biden stuff. So Ted Cruz did a little walk of shame at the airport. He went to Cancun. His excuse was that he wanted to go and drop his daughters off in Cancun, basically, because that's normal, right? Let's take a look at that walk of shame.
Yeah, I just answered a whole bunch of questions. Go home and keep working to get the grid reopened, to get power restored, to get water back on. A lot of Texans are hurting, and this crisis is frustrating. It's frustrating for millions of Texans. It shouldn't happen.
We know it's frustrating. We know. I hate the gratuitous Texas mask on his gross little beard. I hate that. I hate everything.
I mean, it's so funny. Yeah, the mask to pander. And when I look at that video, just look at his face. He just reminds me of a scared little boy. Mm-hmm. He looks terrified, and he should be terrified. I mean, he just completely abandoned his own constituents at a time of crisis to go on a beach vacation. Like, what's the excuse? Is Mexico stealing our politicians too? Is that what he's going to say? It's just so pathetic.
I don't know, Anna, if you know, he was very cold in his house. It was something he was experiencing alone. No other people around him were experiencing such a thing. I mean, but like, how callously does he take his oath of public office and public service? I mean, these are our public servants. They get paid by us. I know he largely gets paid by corporations and donors, but they get paid by us. Let's take a listen to his explanation, though. He held a little press conference where this scared little boy still wasn't able to come up with a legitimate excuse, except, by the way, to blame his young daughters because they said, "Daddy, tomorrow I want to go to Cancun and I want to bring all my friends." And he was like, "Okay, let's listen."
Whether the decision to go was tone deaf, look, it was obviously a mistake, and in hindsight, I wouldn't have done it. I was trying to be a dad, and all of us have made decisions. When you've got two girls who have been cold for two days and haven't had heater power, and they're saying, "Hey, look, we don't have school, why don't we go, let's get out of here," whether...
Blaming your daughters. That's what he's doing. He's hiding behind his young daughters. It's insane. Mm-hmm.
It's insane. I mean, anyone with any self-respect and love for their family would not use their children as a shield. And that's exactly what he's doing here. But, you know, as he was talking about, I mean, there was a little bit of transparency there, though, because he's admitting, like, my kids were cold and we wanted to go to a beach vacation, like warm up a little bit, you know, and it reminds me a lot of how conservatives usually operate when it comes to other issues, right? Like, for instance, this vicious fight to do away with reproductive rights for women, who is that going to impact? It's going to impact pretty much anyone who's a worker in this country, anyone who doesn't have the means to travel to another country in order to get, or another state in order to get, either an abortion or, you know, the very things that Republicans are fighting so aggressively against. But if you're wealthy, yeah, you could just travel out of state. You could travel out of country. You could do what you need to do in order to circumvent the failures of our government. And that's exactly what he did. He thought, well, Texas is in a bad shape right now. I don't want to deal with it. Sentence on break. Why not go to Cancun? Not a big deal. And he basically admitted that in that interview.
Yeah, he made some more admissions that we'll just that we'll show now, and then we'll let you go. But I just love that quote from that. I was trying to be a dad.
Well, you can resign and go be a dad if you want to.
Yeah, dude, why don't you be a stay-at-home dad, right? Buck the traditional gender norms and just do that. You'd be doing a lot more good than you are doing right now. I mean, I feel for your family. You seem to have zero loyalty to them, and you've demonstrated that on the national stage multiple times. But, like, be a stay-at-home dad. You'll be able to watch all the porn you want, and it won't even be a big scandal on your professional Twitter account. But he admitted, yeah, he was going to stay for the weekend.
Our girls asked, said, look, school's been canceled for the week. Can we take a trip and go somewhere warm? And Heidi and I, as parents, we said, okay, sure. And so last night I flew down with them to the beach, and then I flew back this afternoon. I had initially planned to stay through the weekend and to work remotely there, but as I was heading down there, I started to have second thoughts almost immediately because the crisis here in Texas, you need to be here on the ground, and as much as you can do by phone and Zoom, it's not the same as being here. And so I returned this afternoon, and I'm here working to make sure to do everything we can to get the power turned on, but also fundamentally to ask the questions, why did this happen?
Yeah, why did this happen? We already know. Was he about to lead into a blaming of green energy, which we know is completely counterfactual? It's 10% of Texas's power grid. It's the fact that they tried to skirt regulations by having their own insularly state power grid where they cheaped out. But it's like unbelievable. He admitted it was going to be a little weekend trip. But before he was trying to go with, in statements that he released, that he was just trying to drop his kids off and then take a quick flight back. I mean, maybe it was a kind of Mike Pence situation, right? Where he wouldn't let his wife fly alone with all those men around, right? Ted Cruz can't let Heidi be by herself with, like, in a tube with men who, like, could look at her?
Yeah, look... As funny as this story is, because he's such a clown and he's so embarrassing, Texans don't have safe drinking water. This is in the wealthiest country in the world. And, I don't like engaging in any of the ha-ha behavior. You know, you might have come across some of it on social media. At the end of the day, these are people. They're suffering. And, you know, as a Californian who's, you know, in Los Angeles right now, throughout the week, as you read all of these horrendous stories, I keep thinking to myself, like, what can I do? What can we do? You know, we know people in Texas. Is there anything that we can send? Is there anything we can do to help? And it boggles my mind to see so many lawmakers. And, you know, obviously Ted Cruz is a prime example of this, who actually have the power to do things that improve people's lives, that can change things systemically that can improve people's lives. But they don't see what they do as a public service. They don't see themselves as public servants. They see this as an opportunity to seal their financial futures. I mean, think about how many conflicts of interest there are baked into the system. The fact that we have lawmakers who can just invest in individual stocks, I think that's a clear example of why you know, this system tends to attract some of the worst people to run as senators and, you know, members of the House of Representatives. I think that we need to make this the type of job that actually is a public service and is seen as a public service and only attracts the best. Right now, the system is set up in such a way that it only incentivizes the worst people to run. And Ted Cruz is, again, a prime example of that.
You might be the prime example. I mean, I just like can't think of a more loathsome dude. But Anna Kasparian at TYT and host of Weekends on Jacobin. Anything you want to plug before you head out?
No, that was perfect. Thank you so much, Emma. Loving the show and looking forward to hearing more of your contributions to Majority Report. Really miss you at TYT.
Yeah, no, well, I miss you too, but... Well, once this is all over, I'll come out to California. We'll hang out. Something like that.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks so much, Anna. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, guys. We're going to take a quick break and then a little bit more content, as they say. Content, content, content. Matt, you there?
Yep, I'm going to.
Sorry. I just didn't know. Yeah. Well, I thought that was great.
I think that's a very good point about if we're going to get a la on Ted Cruz about this stuff, which I think we should because he's horrible and, you know, his operation as a senator should be made as difficult as possible, especially when he does something so callous. Everyone should get back to work. And I also just want to follow up on what you said about the student loan stuff where Psaki says, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, but that they're awaiting guidance from, you know, getting people staffed up in the administration before they could comment on whether it's legal or not to do the 50K. He's already commented on it. He's been commenting on it for a while that he doesn't think he can. And I don't know. I think it's just mendacity. And I think that the energy that we threw at Sean Spicer for blatant lies should be thrown at the press secretary now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, though, is like I saw there was some trending topic about Jen Psaki a few weeks back, basically calling her a girl boss because she shut down the reporter. I mean, guys, we should treat press secretaries like liars because they are paid to lie on behalf of the administration.
It's one of the highest echelons of lying, like possible in human history, really, is for the president of the United States. And yes, like all the idea that that there's a question from one of the press corps, like do you promise to be truthful, or like it's basically like asking Captain America, like, will you stand for truth, justice, and the American way? It's like, people, these people are going to lie to you. It's your job to figure out how. And it's not even that hard now because it's clearly just this hemming and hawing about whether it's legal. Psaki has to cover for that. So they say, well, we're not sure yet. So we need to have DOJ. And it's the same thing as like, we want to take guidance from Congress, but 10K is what we're after. And like all that. And also the targeting, like, about stuff. And I admit I have a lot of graduate school debt myself, but no dimension of targeting is it worth it. Cancel the debt and get people out from under usurious rates for the, you know, gall of getting educated.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Again, like some press secretaries may lie to greater degrees than others, but that doesn't mean that they aren't lying. And I appreciate Anna's frank talk about the Democrats because, you know, I think we're all going to be experiencing some sort of desire to, and I've experienced it myself, a desire to kind of look for the good in what we're seeing right now because it's at least like some semblance of stability or normalcy in an old, you know, sense. But that's not really the case. There's still insidious things going on behind the scenes. There are still machinations and justifications for not making people's lives better. I mean, that's really what it is. It's bending over backwards to find managerial and institutional obstacles to create those obstacles in order not to improve people's lives. And it should be treated with that contempt.
Yeah, I mean, the foreign policy stuff is not a huge surprise, like Biden supporting, you know, basically the establishment in Haiti and Ecuador. But it's also interesting, like these, that you know, him as the middle of the party guy, right? Like the middle of the party is not doing nothing on student loan debt, at least rhetorically, right? The middle of the party is definitely not selling out immigrants and migrant communities like it looks like he's going to do with his, you know, just I like he hasn't reversed. I think it's who I would the question I'm curious about at this point is like, who what promise has Biden followed through on? What's the best example of one of those? Because everything else seems to be pretty horrid.
Well, just returning things to status quo, right? You know, reengaging in the Paris Climate Accord, which I believe becomes official today. Mm. You know, renewing talks with Iran in terms.
Yeah, but even that is like they're. I don't like the way they're doing that either.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, though, like from Iran's perspective, they may be reengaging in a different way as well. I have not liked what I've seen from Tony Blinken in terms of foreign policy, but like. Right. Iran's perspective, there has to be a different approach as well, because they're like, okay, what if there's a change in 4 years and this is entirely ripped up? I mean, the skepticism from their end is going to be substantial.
Well, that's why America should make the first, second, and third move on it, in my opinion.
I should, but that would be disregarding decades of entrenched arrogance.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the foreign policy stuff.
Yeah, there you go. But in terms of what Biden's been good at, vaccines. I don't really have a ton of issues with what he's done in terms of vaccine distribution using the Defense Production Act. And like it's him holding firm on $1.9 trillion stimulus is like one of the things I didn't expect him to do, I guess. I'm surprised that he's kind of bucking the Larry Summerses of the world. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see. That's another thing. I'd like to, I don't know. They're bucking it to an extent, but they've also gone back on means testing and the $2,000 entirely. I mean, look, I get the $1,400 plus $1,600. That $600, that made a lot more sense in January.
Yeah.
And like the farther we get away from this, I'm sorry, absolutely any good faith argument that you can just stack these like months and months apart is gone. So I don't know. I think
I agree with you 100% on, especially, I mean, the manipulative marketing of the $2,000 checks in terms of Georgia, it's going to be a problem for them politically. I don't know if you agree, Matt.
No, I think it should be. I think like it's impossible to, they're setting themselves up for exactly what, I mean, everyone who was very cynical about it is that a midterm of, hey, what have you done besides lie about what you were going to do? In terms of, like, I don't know, like the vaccine's good. But again, that just strikes me as not entirely Joe Biden's doing. Like that could have been done by pretty much any replacement level president. I guess maybe like Mitt Romney would have done it as a Republican. I mean, I imagine maybe, right? Like the baseline here is so low. And yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it was set there, and it's going to take a second to kind of recalibrate everybody's minds in terms of expectations, I believe. But yeah, do you want to get to another clip? We're doing extended first hour today, right, Matt? Matt?
Sorry, I got muted. I think we can go to the fun half. I think Anna was enough for a casual Friday because it's just you and I in the fun half also. So.
Yeah, just us in the fun half. But yeah, I mean, Anna, come on. She brought the fire. That's sufficient for casual Friday first half. Guys, we're going to head into the fun half now, get to more clips. Appreciate you this entire week, you know, sticking with our technical glitches. It's just been me and Matt. We've been short staff, but I really think the show's gone great, and it's all because of the Majority Report audience being so supportive and awesome. So love you guys so much. Can you please give the stream a like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed, and Matt, what's going on Left Reckoning and Literary Hangover?
Last night we had pretty massive show on Left Reckoning. Grace Blakely, a big 50-minute interview on her sort of COVID economy, the financialization of the world economy stuff. Very interesting. And a little bit about state theory, why it's not just like more government spending equals better. You have to talk about how those economic decisions are being taken and is it democratic. And also we had the Valley Labor reporters who down in Alabama to talk about the Bessemer Amazon union drive there and a little bit about Alabama, sort of submerged organizing history among Alabama labor. So full show. And we also went deep into that this energy electricity stuff in Texas isn't just red state, blue state stuff, because frankly, it's all market deregulation. The same thing that causes the outages in California is the same thing that caused them in Texas. It's we've gone to this competition model and we go deep into that. So yeah, like Anna said, you don't want to get into this blue state, red state sort of enjoying where the suffering is allocated, because guess what? Texas's grid is extra Texas. You know, they have to do everything a little bit more private and a little bit more freedom, but every grid has become like this with this like dispersed responsibility for who's supposed to keep the lights on. And so we went deep into that. So patreon.com/leftreckoning for that and the post.
Yeah. And guys, yeah, don't get into that red state stuff, because there are plenty of Democrats in Texas. And you're looking at it from that angle, it's I don't know. I think that's a little sociopathic. But so Jamie, she has an Antifada Twitch stream tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern. It's called a pop culture party. Pop culture party. I believe she mentioned that they're going to be talking about Britney Spears and the Free Britney movement. Gotta say, guys, if you have Hulu or FX, I'd really highly recommend the Britney documentary. It's a lot more substantive and indicting about our culture than you might think. twitch.tv/theAntifada. You'll be able to find that stream there. And of course, I don't think Nomiki streams today, Matt, but always check out the Nomiki show. And yeah, heading into the fun half. Thank you guys so much. Like the stream. I've been forgetting to say that all week, but do so. Please do so. All right, here we go.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird.
No way!
Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But damn, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.